And so we can now start the last session of the day. There are two talks, and the first one is by Olivier Parcollet about quantum dimer dynamical mean field theory and beyond.
Thank you, Antoine. Let me first thank the organizers for this nice workshop and invitation. So we already had a lot of, couple of talks about cluster DMFT and the one-bound U-bar model by Andy, Gabi, and André-Marie. I think it's fair to say that now there are a couple of things from which we can reach a consensus among various cluster methods and these systems. As I remind you, these are cluster extensions of DMFT, either by taking, instead of one site in a self-consistent bath, a couple of sites, if you have a real space picture, in a self-consistent bath, or if you view it in reciprocal space, this series of patching here, where you take the self-energy as a constant on each color patch. And in principle, if you can solve a large number of patches, you would reach the exact solution of the model. So from this method, there are, I think, a couple of things we can say. First, we have D-wave superconducting phase, and that's a robust feature. We see in various clusters, 2x2, 8 sites, 16 sites cluster. We also have a dome of this superconductor versus doping, so it has the shape which we expect. We also have indication of the role of the antiferromagnetic fluctuations on J scale, more exactly, in the pairing mechanism. In the normal phase, we all find a pseudo-gap phase, which is, let's say, emerging from the MOT insulator at low doping, for which we find K-space differentiation, meaning node and anti-node. We find Fermi arcs without having a long range order. And we also find an important role played by singlet physics in this phase, maybe reminiscent of RVB. So there are many features which are observed in experiments which are in agreement with what we find in the calculation with these methods, both in normal phase and superconducting phase. Of course, there are still many open questions. What happened exactly at low temperature? What are the details? What about the charge density wave, as has been discussed in previous sessions? More important, so what I've been working on this cluster in the last 2-3 years, especially in the 8 and 16 site clusters, but since Andy has done a very nice job on explaining all of that to you this morning, I will focus on something else, and basically on two points. I think basically there are two very important issues with this cluster method. Somehow, these clusters are a bit too big because it's hard to get a minimal physical picture out of 8 sites or 16 site cluster. So what I would like to do first is to present a work which we did a few years ago with Michel Ferraro about the simplest possibility of clusters being 2 sites in a self-consistent bath. And the second part will be, we'll talk about relation between spilt fluctuations or long-range fluctuations on MOT physics, and I will basically propose a new way of doing this. In fact, clusters are also too small. I mean, we cannot take into account in clusters long-range fluctuation, as we have discussed already. Our resolution in K-space is still quite poor, and let's face it, the convergence of this method as a computational physics method is difficult in the pseudo-gap regions, mainly because of the sign problem. So what we like to have is to better use our algorithmic capabilities of solving little impurities and 2 impurities in a bath by improving our formalism. So let's start with the quantum dimer in the bath. That's a work which has been done with Michel Ferrero here and Gabi, Antoine, and a few other collaborators a few years ago. The idea is very simple. Let's solve the first of this cluster here, 2 patches. So when you have 2 patches, it means that you cut the Brillouin zone into 2, this region here and the inner region here, the outer patch and the inner patch. And if you superimpose that to the experiments, basically the inner patch is where you expect to have the Fermi arcs, the outer patch, the antinode, where you expect not to find it. So using the DCA constructions, we can map this problem to a 2-site Anderson impurity problem in the bath, which is represented pictorially here. in the following way, in the sense that the bonding orbital of these two sites will be associated to the nodal region, and the anti-bonding orbital of these two side cluster will be associated to the anti-nodal patch. So if we solve that, and that's a very easy problem to solve, you solve it with a simple Monte Carlo, there's no sign problem, it's quick, it's not supercomputing here, we can do it on a small machine, you can find that at high doping and temperature, the MFT is not corrected, the fact that the self-energy is the same in both patches, but below 16%, what happens is that the renormalized chemical potential, mu minus the self-energy at zero frequency, reach the bound edge of the patch, and therefore quasi-particle stops to exist in the outer patch. They only exist in the inner patch. And we have a picture of an effective bound transition at low energy, meaning our pseudo-gap will be viewed as a momentum-selective phase transitions. So if you, from that, plot ARPES curves, and this plot has been shown by several speakers before, what you have, by just smoothing what we have for the self-energy before, for different doping, you see at high doping, there is no differentiation. And when you reach low doping, around 12 and 8% doping, you will find your Fermi arcs, I mean, somewhat similar to what you find in experiments. Of course, here, the resolution is very rough. There is basically only 2 points, basically the nodal direction and the anti-nodal direction. All the rest is interpolation, just to make a nice graph. But you see that this phenomenon is, it gives you a simple picture of the Fermi arc. Of course, it's compatible with larger cluster, which we solved after, especially in collaboration with Emmanuel Goul and Andy Melis. For example, the 8-site or the 16-site cluster here, and some version of the 4-site cluster, which also displays this selective mode transition in K-space, meaning that if you look at the Fermi surface here, you will have this patch will go insulating, the blue one, and this will remain metallic, as we find in the two sides. So the appearance of arc is a robust feature. And let me emphasize here, I'm not saying that the pseudo-gap is a phase transition. It appears like a transition in this cluster. For me, it's an artifact of having sharp discontinuity in the k-dependence of the self-energy. So it's, in fact, a crossover. The important thing is that in these small systems, you can analyze what are the states which matters in the cluster states. Why? Because in the Monte Carlo, for example, in the path integral which we solve, you can look at the time that you spent in each state of the cluster, or using specially designed Slave-Bose methods, which are specially designed for multiplet atomic, for multiplet of complex atoms or singlets, we can also identify the states which dominate the physics. And you can see that on this picture. This weight is represented here in log scale as a function of doping. You see a high doping, it's relatively complicated, but at low doping, there are two states here which dominate. S, the singlet state, meaning you have two spin, one half in a singlet, and the other state called here 1+, which is one spin, one half, and one hole, or one hole in a singlet, if you wish. And these are the two states which dominate the physics. Basically, you can project all the rest. And this is related to what I think Subir will talk about in his talk after. In fact, the picture is a bit more sophisticated than a simple transition. What you get in the anti-nodal patch, if you look at the spectral function A of omega, is in fact a pseudo-gap, not a gap. And for example, here we have here the spectral function, the function of omega, for different doping at low temperature, for 20% to 4%, you see that the structure here happens opens at low energy, which we identify as a pseudo-gap here, or here you can zoom it. And if you look at the size of this structure as a function of delta, you see that it starts here at some doping and then increases when you reach the Mott insulator. Okay. So it's not as primitive as a simple transition, it's a bit more complex. And this structure also opens when you cool from high temperature. So if you are high temperature here and lower temperature here, you see this structure develops here when you cool the system here at 8% doping. We went a little further in this. In try to compare a bit more with optics experiments and sigma C conductivity, which is easy for us because it's a simple convolution of the two spectral function times a form factor here, which I should have written, which is cosine kx minus cosine ky square, which select the antinodal region. And as expected from the previous graph, you see that at low doping and at low temperature, you open the pseudo gap. So here you are in the metallic region, you see the metallic peak, which is built at low temperature. And when you go to lower doping, you see this deep here, and this pseudo gap, which is open as a function of frequency. And this is a qualitative agreement with experiments, as has been also discussed in the previous talks. Here, there are curves in YBCO. Forget, of course, the peaks here, which are due to Fournens. You see the same qualitative picture of opening of a pseudo gap close to the Mott insulator. So to summarize this part, basically with already two impurity in the self-consistent bars at a DMFT, we can capture basic feature of the pseudo gap. The differentiation in K-space, the note and the anti-note differentiation, the Fermi arc. We can also capture the pseudo gap as a function of omega, and the fact that we are dominated by singlet physics and these two states I discussed. Now, I would like to discuss the following question. How can we do better? How can we improve resolution in K-space, for example? And how can we also try to put back into these methods the large distance spin fluctuation physics, for example? So this is a recent work which has been done in my group in Saclay with my student, Thomas Hall, and this has just appeared on CONMAT this morning, I think. And the idea here is the following. We have had several talks in this workshop about the Mott physics approach with clusters. And this has been discussed already, so I won't come back to this. And also spin fluctuation approaches by several speakers, and especially Andrei Chubukov and Catherine Pepper. Spin fluctuation approaches focus on the effect on medium to long range antiferromagnetic fluctuational electrons, for example, close to the antiferromagnetic quantum critical point. And in its simplest diagrammatic form, I can view it as the fact, I take for the self-energy a simple diagram, self-consistent, where I have this fluctuation, and the effect of this fluctuation, this describes the effect of this fluctuation on the electronic gas. And this theory is already quite sophisticated and can capture a lot of physical phenomena as we know well, like hot and cold spots, of course, D-wave superconductivity. However, in this theory, there's no way to basically do Mott physics, and in the method that we have to treat Mott physics, as has been discussed before, there is no real way to incorporate long-range, the effect of long-range antiferromagnetic fluctuation, let's say, on the electronic fluid. And if you look at the talks this morning and at the conclusion that the two approaches reach for the pseudo gap in particular, they are vastly different. In fact, they have really nothing with each other in common. And what I would like to have as a theorist is a formalism which would encompass both approaches, in which I know that at weak coupling, spin fluctuation certainly is certainly correct. At very strong coupling, DMFT and this approach are certainly also correct. However, what I'm interested in is intermediate coupling, and I would like to have a formalism in which I can switch from one to another and look at the competition between these two pictures. And how to proceed? Well, you can decouple the interaction, for example, with the boson, let's say in the charge and spin channel. So that's a Hubbard-Stratonovich decoupling. Simple step here. So you have your electrons, and you have your boson phi that carries the fluctuations and a three-leg interaction between them with a lambda. If I look at the self-energy of the electron, it has the form I identified before, plus, of course, here, a function which is the three-leg vertex lambda, and that lambda is a very complicated function of kq omega. A priori, of course, we don't know it. That equation is exact, and these are called vertex corrections. The approximation I'm proposing to study is to approximate lambda by a local problem, computed, of course, with a self-consistent impurity model, but function of two frequencies. So here we are shifting the focus. We are not trying to compute self-energies or Green function, like in DMFT, or in cluster DMFT, or GW plus DMFT, or extended DMFT. We are trying to focus first on the vertex, meaning on the interaction between the boson and the electrons.
So you can grab
Yes.
Pastoral self-manager also included in
that. Yes, yes, I didn't draw it. I will draw it later. Yes. I will draw more equations. So there are other methods that try to do that at the DMFT level, which I mentioned here, but we try to get something as simple as possible. That's what I'm discussing today. So I'm going to spend a couple of minutes just trying to give the idea and the theoretical idea of why we are doing this, and then I will switch to results. So first, a very simple definition, just semantics. This is a Hubbard model. There are two obvious limits, U equals zero, weak coupling, of course, and the other one, which I call here atomic limit, which means T equals zero, meaning isolated atoms. That's what I will call atomic limit in this talk. So let's go back to DMFT. We know what DMFT is, of course, and like many approximations in physics, you can view it as approximating a functional of the quantity of interest. You can do that, for example, in magnetism, where you take the thermodynamic potential as a function of the magnetization, standard classical mechanics, statistical mechanics. The other famous example, of course, is density functional theory, where you construct a functional of the electronic density, and then you try to approximate the part which is difficult, which you cannot compute exactly with the LDA, for example. And DMFT focus on free energy depending on the one particle grain function, which is written here, a simple term here, and all the complicated terms in this Lüttinger-Ward functional, whose derivatives give you the self-energy. Phi basically encodes the deviation from the free problem. And what DMFT does, by definition, is to replace phi by an atomic approximation. I'm saying I take the phi of the atom, which is already a very complicated function, it's an infinite series of diagrams, but I use that as my phi from my lattice, and that is the definition of DMFT. The corrections to local terms, local corrections, you can include step by step, are cluster corrections. These are the cluster methods. So as a result, DMFT is exact for U equals zero and in the atomic limit. That's one of the key of its success, especially in the mode transition, because you are exact in both limits, and you can start interpolate between the two. And we know that, of course, that is not the usual way that people present DMFT in talks, where people talk about an impurity in a bar, self-consistently computed. The fact is that it is equivalent, as has been shown early on by Antoine and Gabi. And the impurity model is, in fact, an auxiliary problem, exactly like Kohn-Sham potential in DFT. And these auxiliary problems allows you to solve this approximation, which is there. But by construction, it is exact in both limits. And the game here, and I think it's the game of DMFT, is to identify which quantity in the many-body problem I should approximate with the atomic physics. Atomic physics is important close to mod transition. And what we should try to do is to identify the right one. And what I propose to focus on is to build a similar scheme, but now not with the Green function, but with the vertex, because that's the quantity I am interested in. So is it doable? In fact, it's almost already done. And such functional, I will not write in all detail, don't worry, is been set up years ago, in fact, by De Dominicis and Martin in their famous paper in 1964, where they compute kind of free energy as a function of Green function and lambda without an explicit term, never mind what it is exactly, and a complicated part again, which now encodes not self-energy, but vertex corrections. And that vertex, which means that lambda is 1 plus dk over lambda, so if I neglect k, I neglect vertex corrections. So again, I'm going to take the atomic approximation of that functional here, plus possibly cluster corrections, and what it will imply immediately is that if I take the u goes to zero limit of kappa here, as I said, there is no vertex corrections, so basically I get the spin fluctuation diagram. If, on the other hand, I take the atomic limit by construction, this formalism is exact, and therefore I will get mod physics, or in practice, I will get DMFT. So this formalism, which we propose to call, triply reducible local expansion, it's a bit trilex. I'm not very good at naming things. Has two asymptotic regimes. By construction, at low energy, at low U, it will have spin fluctuations, and at high U, or I mean in the atomic limit, it will reduce to DMFT. The only little question remaining here is, can I solve this thing? Because, you know, this is a horrible function. And the answer is, fortunately, yes, it's even better. You can even solve it with the same tool that you are using to solve the MFT. You can solve it with an impurity model here. The only difference is that your interactions, spin-spin and density-density, are now retarded. That's the extended DMFT impurity model, except that you should compute three-point correlators, not grain functions. From then, you compute lambda here, and you have a self-consistency cycle like in DMFT. So you solve your impurity model, put back into self-energies and polarizations, that was your question, the impurity vertex, which is local, and then loop. And you can solve that as a cost of a single site DMFT, which is much faster than solving a cluster. And with a modern algorithm, especially the ones worked out by Yunio Tsuki in 2013, it's fast. It's not easy to do, but when it is running, it's fast and there is no sign problem. Yes. So the features are basically a formalism with spin fluctuation and mod physics built in, k-dependent self-energies. As a result, you get susceptibilities as well because you have the bosonic green functions. The central object is the vertex, the effective interaction. It could be controlled by clusters, and most importantly, it is solvable with today's algorithms, not something we could do in 10 years. And the last thing I want to show is some results. So we started to solve systematically this approximation. And the first thing is to solve the mod transition at half filling. So as a function of T and U, so zero doping, no frustration, T prime equals zero, you have here the green points, which are the points we computed. And we can compute it until the correlation lengths in the antiferromagnets become relatively large, below which there is a phase I will not discuss. What I will discuss is three points here, one deep in the metal, low interaction, one deep in the insulator, and one correlated metal in the middle. All of that, of course, being below the Néel dome if you really put it in DMFT. So if we do that, well, if you look in this region A, you have a metal. For example, let's look at the imaginary part of the local self-energy. You see that in both A and C, it's the same as DMFT. Here, it's metallic-like. Here, it's an insulator because of that shape of self-energy. And in the middle here, you have something which departs with DMFT, which is a correlated metal. And all of that is driven by the vertex. That's the variable I chose now to approximate. This vertex is a function of two frequencies here. And I can plot a slice of this as a function of omega for two big omegas. At a point here, lambda is almost equal to one, so there is, meaning there is no or very little vertex correction. It's basically a constant in the spin sector. In the C point here, C is almost the atomic vertex, which you can explicitly compute for an isolated atom. These are the dotted lines here. Well, these are our calculations, and you see it's very close in this region, maybe except, again, in the spin sector. And in the correlated metal, you have some structure in the vertex, which, you know, your metal is not DMFT-like. It is correlated. And of course, you can also look at the k-dependent self-energies at the point and susceptibilities. Again, in the metal here, you have a strong peak in the antiferromagnetic region. That's the region where the spin fluctuation diagram dominates the calculation. The imaginary part of the self-energy is strongly differentiated. It's small because U is taken very small here. Deep in the insulator, it's DMFT. Everything is flat as a function of k. DMFT does a very good job. But here in the middle, you have a correlated metal with vertex corrections and k-dependent self-energies and polarizations. And if you start doping this, take this point and take 1 point in doping, at 10% doping, at low temperature, you naturally find some Fermi arc in the spectral function, which in this case is due partly to this antiferromagnetic correlation that you have, which is peaked in pi-pi, partly to the vertex structure. And to conclude, I would like to come back to the first part of my presentation. I told you that with a little dimer, you could already find a few features of the pseudogap because of singlet physics. So where is the dimer? Well, I didn't even use it yet. What I have done is I've taken spin fluctuation and mod physics. That's what I started to discuss today. Of course, you can now make cluster correction again, the same game we have played with regular DMFT. And that would include the effect of local singlet on top of what we already have. And if we get to larger clusters, a priori we would get control. And the question, you know, is of course, is it better? Does it converge faster? And that's clearly questions for the future. This leads to my conclusion. So I will not repeat what I just said. These are summaries, but rather focus on the open questions. Clearly, we need to look more in, you know, and solve systematically the phase diagrams in dopings and try to look better, more systematically, various quantities. Study cluster corrections and, of course, enter the D-Wave superconducting phase. And the most important thing is to systematically benchmark it against cluster methods for which we have 10 years of experience. Thank you. Thank you.